Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single time, because the listeners demand it, because she's the most awesome person on the planet, Treya Kaufman.
Aww, I do sort of imagine people demanding it. Like, I mean, demands
yes,
a bottle.
Just, can you imagine the reviews we would get if you weren't here? It'd be like, one star, why is Andrea here?
One star, Matthew Rushing talks to himself for an hour.
How boring would that be? Oh my gosh. Oh goodness. Well, we are excited to be back as we are really digging into the meat of, I feel like, the Goblet of Fire. I mean, it's a long book, and so this is chapter 14 we'll be talking about this week with the Unforgivable Curses. But before we do that, of course, you know, just a huge reminder, as we were joking about iTunes reviews, thank you so much to everybody who's given us one and actually heard back from one of our winners, so I'll be sending out their book this week. Really appreciate everybody who went through with our iTunes review contest. It means a lot to us. And so, but keep those star ratings and reviews coming. Help other people find the show. Let people know what you think. We always call out those who have reviewed us here on the show. So you become internet famous with Owlpost. That's right.
You become internet reviewer famous.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So we really do. We appreciate everybody who's taken the time to write us a written review and let us know what they think of the show. Of course, you can find us all over the place wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Twitter, so be following us at Join Nerd Party. That's really, I mean, I feel like not enough people are following us and at Join Nerd Party, and, you know, we post the shows there. We love interacting with the fans of the show and all of the shows, the entire network. So it's just a great place to get fun nerd news as well. So make sure you're doing that. Also, like us on Facebook. Facebook is a great place to interact with all of the shows as well. We post all the shows there, and it's a good place to interact with each host on their show. So make sure that you go over there and like us and interact with us. Let us know what you're thinking about Owlpost. We, Dre and I, have a great time anytime somebody comments on there. We will comment back. So I mean, it's not as though you'll have to wait. It'll probably be at 10 minutes between the time that you comment and we respond most of the time.
That's
so,
a real
testament
to our lives, you all.
Exactly, pretty much. But we love doing that. And then, of course, last but not least, you can go over to thenerdparty.com. While you're over there, you can check out every single show that we're doing here on the network. There's some great shows that we've got. On top of that, go to the contact section if you would like to email us. Choose Owlpost as the show, and then that email will come to Dre and I. We'll be able to talk to you. So, Treya, as I mentioned before, you know, we're talking about the Unforgivable Curses chapter, and I kind of like the way that she starts this one, because she's given some time that's passed, and they're talking about how the most eventful thing that's happened in, like, the last 6 days is Neville melting down his 6 cauldron and potions, and Professor Snape being in even a worse mood than he's ever been in before.
Yeah, I would be in a worse mood than I was ever before if someone kept getting the job that I wanted.
Yeah, I really like them talking about the reason that he's in such a foul mood, and the fact that, you know, of course, he's wanted this job for a very long time, Defense Against the Dark Arts, and everybody keeps getting it but him. And on top of that, can't be all that excited that it was Moody who got this job.
For sure. I do like them talking about Moody turning him into a horny toad and then bouncing him around the dungeon. it was really good.
Well, and it what's funny is that it's reminiscent of what happened last year, where, you know, Snape walks out of the cupboard in class because the Bogart dressed as, you know,
as
Neville's grandmother.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you add that visual to this visual, and it is really funny. So, and I also thought it was interesting, too, because, you know, the way that she describes the kids with class is, you know, for the most part, they're in school, right? And kids don't tend to look towards, you know, certain subjects or anything with anticipation for the most part. But last year, I mean, unless you're Hermione and then you're looking forward to everything. Mm-hmm. But there are those certain subjects that do kind of end up, you know, taking your, they're just grasping you.
And I really like,
yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And then there are those teachers too. So last year, Defense Against the Dark Arts was a class that all of the students seemed to like, except for maybe Malfoy and his gang, because Lupin really was teaching. And was really making it interactive and fun for the students. And this year, we've already heard that people are really liking Moody because he knows his stuff. And finally, our fourth years get into class with Moody. And I thought this, I actually feel like the way that she writes it, it happens a lot like it does in the movie for the most part. But there were just some parts here where I felt like she does a good job of explaining the psychology of what's happening to specifically Harry.
And Neville. To some extent.
Mm-hmm. That I felt like really made this a much better thing. Like, in fact, in the movie, I would have loved to have seen them kind of use flashbacks of Harry's parents dying. Like that was going on. I think that would have been really effective. But I love the way too. I think Moody comes off even more interesting here with his format of teaching because he comes off even better. Like he seems like somebody who's very interested in teaching these kids about what they are going to face and giving them the heads up. And preparing them for what the worst is out there. And, you know, can't really, I would want to know personally.
Well, and then you've got, you know, constant vigilance. I literally cracked up every time he shouted that in this chapter.
Yeah, I did too. I also think it's interesting too that he picks out some favorites in the class that don't normally get favored. You know, he talks to Ron. Ron, Hermione, and Harry get upfront seats because they're really excited about this class. But they also are, Ron's dad just saved Moody from a really bad. He could have gone to prison with this dustbin mess. And so I enjoyed seeing him and Neville kind of get picked out when raising their hand and given the opportunity to kind of shine in a way that they're not normally able to do in other classes.
Well, and you get the impression that Moody kind of knows something about Neville too, and that there's kind of something going on with Neville. Based on the fact that, you know, we already know he's kind of a nervous character. And in this, he's even sort of more quiet and somber nervous than he has been in the past. And you sort of, you know, Harry sort of identifies that, like, there's kind of something bothering him about what's happening. And Moody doesn't go into quite the same context with Neville that he does with everyone else. Like, Ron, you're Weasley's kid, you know, blah, blah, blah. He like has mm-hmm. sort of like a story for everyone he's interacting with. And then yep. he gets to Neville and he's like, Longbottom, right? And he's like, yeah. And then like, no, he doesn't say anything, moves on. So like you get the impression that he knows something or there's something about Neville that we don't know yet that will come into play and make more sense when we find that out later.
You know, I wanted to ask you, because obviously the kids have this conversation about whether or not, you know, being shown these curses, these unforgivable curses, you know, whether that's the right thing. And I wanted to ask you what you thought of that, because to me, the explanation that the kids kind of come up with and then the explanation that Moody actually gives, I felt like was something that was very smart and made sense to me. But I was wondering if you felt like it works for you.
I mean, I think it depends on your parenting style from that perspective, like if you come at it from like a parent versus, you know, a student, I think you could have different answers, right? I obviously have not reached that age of parenting yet where we're having difficult conversations like that, but I have always admired the parents that are kind of very upfront and honest about stuff early on. Even if it's kind of scary or if they're worried about how they're going to take it, I don't know. My husband and I talk about this all the time because I don't want to tell my kid about Santa. It's kind of similar. Like, I don't want to lie to her about Santa and then have to come back later. I just don't feel like that is important enough to set that precedent that I'll lie to her about something, you know? So kind of the same here. I would rather just have them know and learn and experience it. And then I think the important thing is that you process it after, which I think is maybe the part that's missing here. I think when you do experience something like that, like these are for an adult, it was kind of like when we talked about the Infinity War on the 602 Club. Mm-hmm. And a girlfriend of mine took her, I want to say he's like 8 year old son to see it. And we all know what happens at the end and we all know it's not real and stuff like that. No, it's not sustainable, but her 8 year old didn't get that and was freaking out and was really upset about it. And so I think the tough thing is there, you have to process it with them. Right. So in this case, you have to process what these kids have seen. These are horrible acts that send people to jail for the rest of their lives. And, you know, they can do terrible things and it has caused things like Harry's parents' loss and whatever's going on with Neville. And you just have to have an opportunity to allow kids to sort of see and learn, but then also talk about it and process how they're feeling about it. And I think maybe that's the part that's just missing from this chapter is you've seen these horrible things and yeah, you need to know what they are, but you also need a forum in which you can talk about them. We're lucky that, you know, Ron and Hermione and Harry are lucky they have each other. And if they need to process it, they're always there for each other. But, you know, Neville didn't. And that was why it, later on in the chapter, you know, we find that Moody calls him up to his office and tells him that, you know, Sprout says he's got a real knack for herbology and that, you know, here's a book he thought he'd really enjoy. I mean, that was kind of his way of processing it with Neville because he knew that he was really sort of disturbed by what just happened.
Yes.
But, you know, I think that as long as you continue to do those things with kids, you should be able to be open and honest with them about most things. And, you know, I think that in this case, I think Dumbledore and Moody were absolutely correct that if, you know, they are preparing for a much darker time in their lives and they would rather not have these kids be caught off guard and have to process and figure out what's going on emotionally and, you know, wizarding capabilities wise in that moment, they'd rather do it now in a controlled environment so that when they're presented with that situation in the street, like Moody was saying, some wizard's not going to come at you very nicely and say, I'm going to perform the Cruciatus curse, you know, like,
hold on,
hold on to your knickers, wizards. But, so I agree. I think that it's important to do that. I think that it leads, you know, I think you have to do it the right way and you have to trust that it's being done the right way by the right people. And that makes it, I think, scary for parents and for kids and for teachers and in the wizarding ministry in this case. But I do. I think that, you know, we have to start trusting people. And, you know, there's my little soapbox of parenting for the day.
No, I mean, I really appreciate that. And you know, obviously you're a parent and I'm not, you know, I just watch people parent, you know, and their different styles.
You just watch people parent.
Yeah. And I am an uncle, you know, to a lot of nieces and nephews, you know, so I see lots of different styles, and, you know, I see the effects that they have on there. So, on the kids and the different tactics that you can take with different kids. But in the end, I think one of the things that is quite nice about J.K. Rowling's work is that she doesn't dumb things down for kids. And I remember talking to John Mills about this idea. You know, he's a parent as well, and him saying, you know, Beowulf used to be a bedtime story for kids, right? You know, and it's dark, And, you know, it's very full of life in every way possible. And I think sometimes that, you know, we end up protecting our kids from the wrong things. And what I thought was really smart here is that is Ron, Harry, and Hermione were able to see that the reason that, you know, Dumbledore, they even say, you know, Dumbledore kind of has done things his own way, right? He does things the ministry might not be a fan of, but Dumbledore does what he thinks is best, right, for us.
Mm-hmm.
And Moody must be on that same path. And I just thought that that was so smart and so interesting because, at least for the moment, where we are in this book, these two professors seem to be very much in line with thinking that these children need to know what's the worst that could happen to them and know the ways in which they can either fight it or know that there is no fighting it, you know, like Avada Kedavra. There is nothing that you can do to fight that. And so I think the way that they're handling it is fantastic. And I like what you said, too. I think, you know, and again, I've talked to somebody like, you know, John about this, and the whole idea of, you know, sitting down with your kids, watching something or reading something, and then talking about it afterwards, like, that's what it means to be a good parent. It doesn't mean sheltering kids from things that they shouldn't know about. And what's so interesting is that, you know, overarching theme for Harry Potter, J.K. has said, is death. And that's not generally a subject that we just sit down and talk to our kids about, right?
Right.
But the whole point of this series is how we deal with death, what death means. You know, we'll get to that later on. She definitely has some interesting and very pointed, I think, thoughts about death, you know? But the fact that here she's trusting these kids enough with the opportunity to know some of the worst of life, and then where and how they can fight against it, I think is really, really cool. And I thought it was really strong. And it's interesting too, because as we're watching here, we see each one of the curses, and the first one, the Imperio curse, you know, the kids kind of think it's funny. And the only one who's not laughing in the chapter is Moody.
Well, and part of it is, you know, they don't understand what's happening or how it could be applied, right? They're kids.
Right,
they just think
right.
that the spider's doing something funny. So they don't really do the whole, okay, well, I can now see how that could translate into
yep.
things that are not so funny.
Which is so interesting because, you know, the moment they moved the Cruciatus curse, nobody thinks that's funny. And you know, the idea, and I really like the way she describes it and everything. I feel like for some reason, it's even more effective than the CGI spider in the movie, where the whole idea of its legs bending the wrong way, and like, there isn't a sound. Like, that it says specifically, she says it doesn't make a sound, but that you can tell it's in pain. And for some reason, to me, that makes it even more creepy and scary. And the kids' faces, just like watching this, they're just horrified. And then, of course, you know, seeing Avada Kedavra actually happen. And I thought what was the most interesting is that for the first time, Harry thinks about this is what it looked like to when my parents died. Because he's heard it from last year. He's heard that happen. But he's never had the visual of what it would look like, and here he gets that. And
Well, he has had the visual. He just had it in a vision. He had it with the groundskeeper at the very beginning of this book, but it's still
right.
not the same as seeing it like face to face in person
mm-hmm.
and having it in somewhat of an academic setting where he can translate
right.
that into, okay, so that's
yep.
what happened to my parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I really liked that she went into that, and that she even described it as, you know, Harry kind of had to come back to class from the fog he was in to hear more about, you know, what Moody was saying. And so I thought that what was so interesting is that the first half of this chapter has a lot of darkness in it with this class. And I thought it was funny that kind of midway through the chapter, she transitions a little bit because they get out of Moody's class, they have dinner, Hermione goes to the library again, and the boys start doing their divination homework and making crap up. And that was just, it was such a funny shift. But to see them go from like such seriousness to just like, well, I guess we just go back to the old divination standby. And making Ron's like,
up,
what?
Making it up.
And the stuff they make up is just amazing.
I don't know how you're supposed to correctly do your divination homework, because I imagine that's just what you do, is you just make stuff up. And I mean, it's predictions, so I predicted it. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess if it just doesn't come true, you know, maybe Venus was actually in the 11th house instead of the 12th house, and you just like missed that somehow.
That's the only thing I could think of as being like actually something she could check is all their like star charting for the most part. I'm going to use that in air quotes, their star charting. But
well, and the best part about this to me was the whole fact of that they're like, oh, we'll just, you know, make it awful. You know, we'll just have the worst things happen to us. She'll just eat that up.
Oh, man. Before we move on to what happens next in the common room here, I did want to jump back into the classroom with Moody for just a second. We sort of brushed over this in that we find out Moody's only here for a year.
Ah, yes, yes.
In that, you know, he says, I only have 1 year to teach you all of these things and you need to know them. And, you know, he mentions that he's, you know, doing this as a favor to Dumbledore, and mm-hmm. that he's come for 1 year out of retirement and then he's going to go back to his quiet retirement, which I thought was hilarious. What's interesting about that is, one, we know he's only here for a year, and it kind of confirms the thing we've seen in all the other books, and that every year we have a new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And secondly, it really kind of is interesting and speaks a little bit to like Dumbledore's, I want to say, like leadership, right? He has this ability to build like loyalty to him without him actually doing anything. You know, it's
or at
not
least that we've seen
right.
so far. Yeah.
He just has this way of inspiring people to do things for him, you know, based on it being the greater good or based on whatever. But he has like this ability to recruit people that is just so interesting and fascinating. You know, like that we're seeing more often that he's got this like motley crew of people from different walks of life and different with different skill sets that he's able to sort of bring together. And this is just one more of his little, you know, special outcasts that we can add to the list of collecting that I thought was really interesting. And it was so subtle and just kind of there. And it's just like, kind of like a thought that you have when you read that. But mm-hmm. I mean, he got someone who is not super popular with people and is kind of a cranky old man to come out of retirement and come teach a bunch of bratty kids for a whole school year. You know, like that says something about Dumbledore and his ability to, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but his ability to, you know, convince people to do things for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. It shows us that Dumbledore definitely knows how to win friends and influence people. Like, and he does it in a way that, like you said, creates loyalty to him, but not in a way that
not a creepy, controlly way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's very natural, and you know, I think from what we've seen of Dumbledore so far in the series, it kind of makes sense because he seems to be somebody who just exudes a quiet confidence, but he also doesn't seem to take himself too seriously most of the time. You know, I mean, people talk about him being one of the greatest wizards of his age, and yet he can be so off the wall and crazy sometimes. And so I think, you know, he seems so I don't want to say down to earth, because, you know, when he makes a crazy statement about, like, you know, socks or whatever, it, you know, it seems kind of odd. But there's just something about him that kind of engenders that whole feeling of trust. And he just has that down. So I think that's really great. And I think you mentioning that, it is going to be something that will play out very interestingly throughout the rest of the series with Dumbledore. So I that's great. No, it's so interesting because random thing that happens in the common room is something that is sort of unusual for Harry, is seeing Fred and George hidden away in a corner working silently. They don't really do things silently.
We know the twins don't do anything silently.
No, no. And the fact that they're like scribbling down on this and this piece of parchment and everything, and he can hear them over there talking about, like, no, that sounds like we're accusing him. We've got to be careful. And, you know, he has no idea what's going on, but it's just this little thing that happens that catches Harry's eye as they're doing their divination homework. And one of the twins looks up and sees Harry looking at him, and Harry just kind of smiles and looks back at his homework. So he doesn't have any idea what's happening. Before he can even pursue it, Hermione comes in and sits down and lays this thing in front of them, and she started a new society.
Yeah, called Spew.
I love how
she
has to
attractive.
Keep, yeah, I love how she has to keep like telling them it's not Spew, it's S-P-E-W. And I'm thinking to myself, Hermione, you're really smart. You've got to know that nobody is going to think of anything but Spew when they hear that. Like, I get that it stands for the Society for the Protection of Elvish Welfare, but that's not how people are going to see it. I love that Hermione can't see that like a normal person would. And she doesn't seem to care that she should have come up with a better name.
She did have a better name. It was Stop the Outrageous Abuse of Our Fellow Magical Creatures and Campaign for a Change in Their Legal Status. But apparently that was just a little bit too long.
Which, I guess she wanted something spiffier or snappier, but I don't think Spew is it. I love, though, that this is what she's been doing. She has been studying in the library to create this society that will promote Elvish welfare as well as magical creature welfare throughout the wizarding world. Something I think that Newt Scamander would be all in favor of. And I love the fact that she's basically telling, not really giving them a choice, oh yeah, you're part of this, and Ron, you're the treasurer, and Harry, you're the secretary, so you might want to be writing this down. the whole thing is just, it's very funny. It's very funny.
Yeah, well, that would be me at some point, so. I do love how she just assumes that, I don't know, I think that's such a great thing, that she just assumes that they are going to be there and support her, and she's passionate about this, and they're going to, they're going to be too, and I just like the, bold faced determination of like, yeah, we're doing this. I mean, that's the kind of relationship they've built, is that she's comfortable enough to believe and just know that you know what, they're gonna do it with her. And even though they don't seem as outraged as she does, and they're talking about finishing their homework, and they're like, we've been working like house elves, you know, like, oh, it's an expression, you know, like, they'll still help her. I think,
well,
it's so great.
And there's and the most interesting thing is, you know, Ron, in a lot of ways, I think it gives the explanation that most people in the wizarding world that are just normal, everyday people think, which is these elves like this. They like doing this. And at least from what we've seen, they seem to be very dedicated to their jobs. You know, they seem to be very all about doing the job that they have been given, right? Even if they're treated badly, So I think it's really interesting, you know, and that's the thing that I think is going to be most interesting to see really play out in the book.
We already saw earlier in this book when we were at the Quidditch World Cup that Winky was talking about how she would never want to be set free and how you ruined him. Now he has all these crazy ideas about equality and that's not real. So you've got it. What's interesting is you have Hermione fighting for a cause and a group that don't really want her fighting for them. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how her quest to get them rights works out, because it's hard if you're trying to give them something that they don't even want. You have to convince a group that they deserve it while convincing the group that they deserve it. You know, like you're convincing wizards that they need to give them rights, but you're also convincing house elves that they deserve those rights. So she's kind of got like a twofold challenge on her hands. So we'll see how well that works out.
Yeah, I really like the way you put that. I mean, because that is the most interesting thing about the book so far, is that the house elves that we have seen don't seem to be all that interested in this kind of thing. I think what they're interested in is just being, you know, what we saw from Dobby, which is to be treated well, right? And that other than that, if they were, then they seem to be relatively happy. So that's going to be fascinating. But before we could even get into that, there's a knock at the window and Hedwig has finally arrived with a letter from Sirius, which says that he is immediately coming north because of all the strange rumors that have happened, because Harry's scar. He says that if it hurts again, Harry needs to go immediately to Dumbledore. If Mad-Eye has, you know, returned, it means he's reading the signs too, if no one else is. And so he'll be in touch soon. And this really frustrates Harry because he's very worried that if Sirius gets caught, it will be all his fault for not keeping his mouth shut. Just not worrying about it. And I thought that was really interesting, the way that he's worried about his godfather. And it makes sense because of what we just saw in this chapter.
I thought it was so interesting. Like, Harry's response was not what I expected.
Yeah.
I didn't expect him to be like, oh, I shouldn't have said anything. To me, Sirius's response was like very clear. There's something going on. This is just another sign. Like, we need to address it. You need to talk to Dumbledore. Like to me, it was very, very clear that it was bigger than Harry. And Harry just went to the like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said anything. Like, now I've ruined his life and he's going to get in trouble. And I just can't. Like, he just took it in a completely different direction than I read the message. So I thought it was so interesting, because for me, I would have been like, all right, I'm going straight to Dumbledore's office. Like, when's the next time I can talk to him? But that is not at all how Harry took it, which was just, it caught me off guard. I mean, I guess when you think about Harry and what he has experienced and how he thinks, it makes sense. But it was not at all the expect that I thought.
Yeah, I think for me, it made sense in Harry's mind, because when we just experienced in this chapter him reliving his parents' death, you know, and seeing how it happened. And this is the last bit of kind of family that he has, which is Sirius. And so it creates that bond between them, which is going to be hugely important. But it also it makes sense that Harry would be worried that he would have put into danger again the very last bit of family that he does have. And, you know, Harry has a sense of heroism in him that he doesn't want to put other people in danger. And I think that is part of this too. It's kind of part of his character to want to make sure that he protects other people, other than having other people protect him, which is, you know, the kid wanting to protect adults, you know, he just has that innately in him. And I think that's something that's really, it's just it's an interesting part of his character, and I think it makes him a fascinating person, and an interesting person to be able to look at. And it's not a good or bad thing. It just is it's just who he is.
That's true. I mean, it makes sense when you put it that way. When I was reading it, I just didn't expect it. So,
no, and I think, I mean, you would think that Harry would feel better, you know, that, my godfather's taking this seriously, you know, and
I'm not crazy.
Yeah. So
I'm not losing my mind.
Yes. He discounts all of those things because there's something else that kind of gets in the way of being able to see all that. And I thought that was interesting. So,
that's true. Yeah. I hadn't thought of any of that. So it caught me off guard when you're explaining it. It makes sense of why it was that way. But I didn't even go there when we were like reading the chapter. I was like, what? This is a good thing. Like, he's telling you you're not crazy. Like,
well, and I think Ron and Hermione kind of take it that way. And Harry doesn't, you know, so it's just it's she does. This is the thing that I think that Rowling does the best job of. Is creating a psychology for the characters that stays consistent and makes sense throughout the series. And honestly, what she's building in this book with some of these things are going to play out in specifically the next book. And so it's very important, some of these responses that Harry is having throughout this book, because they're going to continue to be built upon. And the same thing for Ron and Hermione. A lot of these things that she's building in here in this story play out into the rest of the story. So it's neat to see her taking those things. And the fact that she's going that deep in her story make a lot of sense. I mean, it really does a great job of creating something that I think this is why people like rereading Harry Potter over and over again, because you can keep going deeper, picking up all these, you know, layers to the different characters and what they're thinking and what they're feeling. It's not just one thing. It's usually many things. So that's just really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's something different every time. So.
Yeah. Which is exciting. I mean, I'm so glad we've been doing this project. It's been so much fun to do. And next week, we're going to meet some Bobatons and some Drumstrang. But before we get into that next week, Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you, talk about what's been going on and maybe their thoughts on the chapter, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFCheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02 and on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with my good friend John Mills, who I mentioned earlier. We have a blast, especially with Solo coming up. Definitely, it's been so much fun talking about Star Wars stuff over the last few years with him. So make sure you check that out. You can find me on the Trek FM network. I'm doing The Orb with Chris Jones, all about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all things geeky that we love. Drea's there frequently, actually. We have some fun shows coming up with her in the next few weeks, so make sure you check that out. And last but not least, talking about films through the lens of faith with my good friend Courtney on Cinema Stories. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.